evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your Sunday night edition of the JerseyNet podcast. We are brought to you, as always, in association with Forest Precision Engineering. And for more on the services they can provide, please visit their website at www.forestprecisioneng.com. And if you don't need any engineering at the minute, they also have a stunning lounge in the historic main stand at Ibrox. And for information on how to book this unique space, please reach out to the club directly at hospitality@rangers.co.uk. I would very much love to end the podcast here tonight, but unfortunately we must talk about and almost perform a post-mortem on our disappointing start to the season. And joining me to do that is Mr. Alan Rogers. Alan, football aside, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks mate, very well. I had a nice long break over the summer. I was abroad for 3 weeks with the wife and kids. Come back all excited about the new season, and yeah, that's where the joy ends, sadly.
Sadly indeed. So we'll jump straight into it. Today's game, obviously, that's an extremely disappointing result. But before we get into the game itself, the team lineup. For me, I was a lot of the personnel that I sort of wanted to see was on show today. The setup sort of surprised me in many ways. What were your thoughts on the lineup?
Yeah, surprising. You know, it's been developed a wee bit of a theme now with McInnes coming in. Just the lineups he's putting out, you know, different defences every time, different midfields every time, different front threes every time. A wee bit flinging stuff at the wall and seeing what's sticking. Now, I think a degree of that is perhaps to be expected, you know, new manager, big squad, turnover and all that kind of stuff. But as he's addressed himself in press conferences, Rangers need to win games, even during periods of flux and periods of transition. So I was a bit surprised to see it. I mean, Dragojevic at right back, when you had McCrory and Sterling on the bench, seems really odd to me. I noticed Fernandez was back in the left-hand side of defence, so Macanha was coming in when Fernandez had been on the right on Thursday. You know, there just seems to be a bit of a mishmash there at the moment. A two-man midfield of Raskin and Devlin isn't for me, if I'm honest. But, you know, we know that's what McInnes likes, is the two in there, certainly domestically. So, yeah, I was a wee bit eyebrows raised at the lineup. You know, not to get straight into it straight off the bat, but, you know, we're only fans, right? But we've all been following Rangers for decades. We may not be involved in football professionally. We may not have played the game professionally, but we know our club. And see when you get one of those lineups where everybody looks at it and goes, oh, really? That tells you something. And in all three games we've played competitively this season, every single lineup in my group chats has been met with, what's he doing? You know, because fans, we know our team. And you can see the lineup and you just think, that's not right. And the level of half-time substitutes that are having to be made, I think, reflects that. So again, we will get into it, but the lineup for me was a wee bit confused, put it that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's all completely fair. You know, what concerns me with it now, I'm certainly not on this, some of the people online who are saying McInnes out and all this nonsense, it's ridiculous, but I don't think he's without criticism either. I mean, the fact that you just pointed to the fact that he's having to make, you know, game-changing substitutions at half-time, well, in every single game that he's been manager so far, does concern me. And that sort of, what you say, flinging things against the wall and hoping something sticks, it's very much what I'm seeing too. And it's kind of what I would have expected of a manager that's maybe coming in that doesn't know the league, doesn't know the club, but it's certainly not what I expected of Derek McInnes.
Yeah, I think when Derek McInnes was appointed, everybody just assumed, right, the one thing we know we'll get from Derek McInnes may not be ticky-tacky football, but what we'll get is a solid, organised, hard-working team. That's what we all thought. Maybe a bit route one and all that kind of stuff, but that's fine for where we were at the moment. But we thought we'll be solid and organised. We are as far from solid and organised as I can remember in my 40 years supporting Rangers. Genuinely. Structurally, we're a complete mess. We lose the ball in midfield, it's basically one pass and you're in. And we've seen that in every single game. And it's really surprising. Knowing, you know, we've obviously seen lots of Derek McInnes teams over the years. It's really surprising to me that that's what we're seeing under this coaching regime.
Yeah, the concern is, you know, I almost thought I can allow for it at the very, very start. And I know we're still early days, but there doesn't seem to be any growth into committing to a system, committing to a team and sticking with those players and giving them a chance to you know, to grow as a team and grow as a group. And that's what I'm concerned as. But if we were to move on to how we actually started the game, I mean, how did you think those early parts of the game, how did, you know, we've talked about the lineup, but how do you think it did actually work for us?
Well, I think it's still a wee bit bedding in. You know, you can see the players don't quite have developed relationships yet. This today with, you know, Curtis and Robbins on the left, you know, you can still see they're not quite on the same wavelength. You know, the two centre halves, I think, were just sort of settling into things. So you can understand there's a wee bit of trepidation. You know, you can understand it. But the theme of this season for me so far has been the level of passing. The level of passing has been atrocious. Multiple times today, simple ball. We seem to have this sort of contagion in the team, whereby if the midfielders get the ball, they lift their hand, there's a fullback or the winger wide, they just need to angle a pass out so the wide man can pick it up, and they hit it straight to the defender. Happened multiple times on Thursday, happened multiple times today. Straightforward passes that just get nowhere near their intended target. And it's really, really noticeable because every player's doing it. Even players that we generally think are relatively decent with the ball at their feet, they're still doing it. And that's what I noticed early today, really kind of hot potato in the ball at times. And just that issue that this team has of not being able to get forward quickly. You know, everything's knocking about at the back. We've seen it for years, if we're honest. Knocking about at the back, you know, aimless passing. Nobody's really advancing up the pitch. There was a stat I read after the game. I think Devlin had 114 touches of the ball, but only four went forward. Now, don't get me wrong, Devlin's not in there as your playmaker. I completely get that. But if it's just a two-man midfield and one of your two is only making four forward passes in over 90 minutes, that's an issue.
Oh, very much so. I think he spent more time between the centre halves in that first half than he did moving forward, definitely. And for me, I was actually pleased to see Raskin come back into the game in the midfield, because I think at the end of the day, I do think he's a class above anything that we have, or to be honest with you, anything in the league. And I think if he's still a Rangers player, we need to be playing him. But as you touched upon earlier, being in a two with Cammy Devlin, you're getting the same thing over and over again. You know, I think I wouldn't necessarily say can't play with him, but I think in a three, which would allow Raskin to be more of that player that we see for Belgium and sort of bringing the game forward a wee bit more. But I just don't think it's going to work, and I certainly don't think. I think it sets the whole tone for us, you know, at home to Hibs. Devlin's good at what he does in terms of being busy, in terms of running, in terms of closing down everything. He will give you it all. But he needs somebody else that can do something different. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, 100%. There's a reason not a lot of teams play 4-4-2 these days. You know, generally it's been left behind, I think, by modern football. So when you're setting up that way, I think you're taking a real risk. You know, and as I say, you get Raskin there, who we know has quality, although he doesn't show it enough for me, but he does have it. He's sitting there next to Devlin. Again, I think Devlin's, as you say, he's good at what he's good at, but what he's good at is relatively narrow. It does remind me, you know, pairing Raskin with Devlin does remind me of, the, you know, 20-odd years ago when McLeish would start games with Barry Ferguson and Bob Malcolm at centre mid.
Yeah.
You sort of go, as a two, I'm not really sure they're going to work together. You know, and it worked out that way because, you know, Raskin kind of got forward a couple of times, but I thought he was stifled a wee bit by Devlin, just not being able to really to be on the same wavelength as him. And Devlin did some good things. He had a really good tackle to stop a counter-attack in the second half and things like that. But again, you know exactly what you're getting from Devlin. And I just wonder if a game at home that you're going to have 70% of the ball, are his qualities needed, you know?
No, I think that's completely fair. I think the biggest problem with the start of this season is, for me, we have four strikers that I think can, between them, get enough goals for us, but we've clearly not been creating, and that's why the midfield surprised me, because it's sort of stifled, you know, Asgard has his, you know, critics and things, and rightly so. However, in the Dundee United game, he was the only one capable of any magic that would sort of take us on, and I think we didn't have a midfield there today starting out that game that showed, here where Rangers were at home, let's create chances, let's go and win the game. So that concerned me. And it does concern me, the amount of subs that are being made at halftime. But moving on to the biggest point in the first half, which was obviously the penalty that was given to Hibs. I would be very, very interested in hearing your thoughts on that penalty.
Well, it just felt like an FU to David McInnes. you know, we know he's involved with the SFA, he's getting this ban after what happened at the tail end of last season, that everybody, the whole world, looked at Scottish football and laughed at these referees. And it just continued today. You know, I've not seen anybody on social media or anything to say that that should have been a penalty. You know, there's a Twitter account, The Refs Watch, I think it's an ex-SFA ref, just said, yeah, disgraceful decision. How can you possibly give that? You know, they've started early this season with their complete nonsense. I did see on Twitter, again, I wasn't at the game, I was watching it in the hotel, but I did see on Twitter that it was 3 minutes after the incident that Robertson stopped it. I didn't feel like as long as 3 minutes. So I'll be corrected on that. Right. But it was certainly over a minute, you know, and the ball going out of play and stuff. So to pull it back, you know, VAR very clear, or UEFA very clearly, VAR will interfere when a clear and obvious error has been made. That is not a clear and obvious error. They're both at it. They're pulling and shoving each other. You know, the guy's got his arms around Dragunjovic's head. Okay, you can see he's got a fistful of his shirt, but, you know, 3-4 years ago when VAR was going crazy with penalties, maybe. But it's been very clear that that's supposed to be toned down. But of course, when it comes to Rangers, when it comes to Scottish refs, everything's off the table. That was a shocking decision. It should never have been given as a penalty. It should never have been given as a penalty after the length of time that had elapsed. No Hibs player claimed for it. And it's curious when these VAR officials suddenly develop eagle eyes or x-ray vision. You know, and that's where the whole system falls down, because the VAR officials are picking and choosing their moments when they want to jump in. And it's a really difficult one for them to explain why they're so inconsistent.
It's beyond embarrassing for the SFA, really, for me. I mean, it's not surprising me by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I think it's twofold. Remember the name of the new player that gave away the penalty?
Dragunjovic
just completely escaped me there. But I think he is naive now. I do think he's stupid in many ways. I think to the fact that he does put his hands on him, but equally there's hands on him too. So how you can pick one over the other is beyond me. And we're really clutching at straws if that's what's happening. There's going to be a lot of penalties this year.
Yeah, I would put money on, say £20. I'd put £20 on no other team this season getting a penalty like that given against them.
And they shouldn't.
They shouldn't, and it'd be quite correct for them to do it. So you can read into that whatever you like about why it was given against us today. That's not going to happen again this season. We'll probably get an apology, although they've not scrapped that panel, or is Willie Collins still doing his wee YouTube videos? We'll probably get another apology. And again, you just start off the season as usual, the usual nonsense. We do need to be a lot better at football. We need to get a lot better and all that kind of stuff. We can be self-critical, absolutely. But when you're getting decisions like that against you, it makes a tough task even tougher, and that's not fair.
So sticking with Dragunjovic, penalty aside, obviously playing out of position there. One thing I can say is he's not a right back. We've seen that he's not a right back. However, for me, I saw it enough the other night and there to see that he is a technically good footballer, and I would like to see what he's able to do in the midfield now. I mean, did you see enough from him to be encouraged at least?
I think so. I mean, he's got to get a reasonable chance. You know, he looks relatively tidy in the ball. Completely agree with you. He's not right back. So let's stop playing at right back. It's my greatest bugbear, players out of position. You know, in an absolute emergency, I can understand what managers would do it if there's injuries or whatever. Fine, it happens. All teams have to do it at certain points. But as I say, there's two fit right backs on the bench. Why are they there if they can't play? You know, it just really drives me crazy. I didn't think he was great at right back. I thought he looked better when he was getting forward. He had a good kind of underlap run early on when he linked up with Jokita.
Yeah,
he's getting his name correctly. He linked up with him quite well. So, you know, there's positive signs there. But look, he's come through. He's got a captaincy at Partizan. Played all his games there at centre mid. Can we please just play him in centre mid? We've got to try and develop these players. Let's not mess around and stunt their development by shifting them out of position and asking them to learn a new role.
Yeah, I mean, it's common sense, isn't it? And it's also, don't get me wrong, neither of the right backs that we have this season have been anywhere near impressive. But it's a big call very early on. It sends a message to them. Yes, you've not started the season well, but I'm literally going to put a 20-year-old centre midfielder in ahead of either of you. I mean, I think
That's the point. If you take into account, we've played three competitive games, we've played six halves, and four different people have started at right back in those halves. It's, he just can't do that, you know, especially, and it adds an extra layer of absurdity to it when you, it's obviously trying to replace Tav. He played, you know, 500 odd games and was a mainstay, and he was fit, you know, 98% of the time. It was always just, there's the right back. We didn't need to worry about it. And now we've had four already. If you include Curtis starting the second half of right back today, you know, it's, I don't know what the opposite of good squad planning is, but this is it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And this has been it for last season, the season before that, and so on. And we expect a change that just is not coming, which is very disappointing.
I think it's pretty damning of the recruitment process as a whole. Although, when did Tav announce he wasn't staying on, like March or something like that? Mm-hmm. You know, but even before that announcement, he was still 33. We've known for about 3 years we're going to need to have a replacement for him. And then he announces he's leaving, and a few months later, we're scrabbling around trying to find a good fit. You know, it seems absolutely insane to me that there's absolutely no plan to replace a stalwart. You know, and even the, you've brought in a right-back like McCrory, who is a completely different type of right-back. You know, and no harm to Ross McCrory, but I do not want to spend this season watching him trying to cross balls into the box. It's just not in his wheelhouse. He's a defensive right-back. Let's just let him be a defensive right-back. If we're chasing a game like we are today, it's not Tav on the right you're looking, trying to whip in deadly balls. In fairness to Tav, he often would come up with the difference. Ross McCrory can't do that. So mm-hmm. let's stop trying it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what you, the point you make there, like Tav did announce, and we have plenty of time to make changes. But similarly, you know, as another sort of indictment of the recruitment team, we knew that Jaden Magoma was going back on loan. We knew that Rommins has made a good start to his Rangers career, but we know that anyone can become complacent if they don't have competition. And Scally's going to be a good player by all accounts, but he's 16. He needs to go out on loan and find his feet. So why we haven't got another left-back to be pushing Rommins? Even if Rommins was playing at his best level, which I don't think he is just yet, I don't think he's certainly not our worst player, but I don't think he's reached the level as what consistency of what he did when he first came in. But even if he was, what if he gets an injury? I mean, who the hell would we be playing on Thursday night at left back?
Well, that's it. It's just horrendous squad planning. I think Scally, by all accounts, is really highly rated, but you've got to balance it up and say, over the years, how many 16-year-olds have we heard, oh, he's the next big thing, and they just don't quite make it. There was a photo, I think when Scally made his debut late last season, there was a photo of him talking to Danny Rule on the pitch. And Danny Rule was a good few inches taller than him. Now, Scally, he's 16, he's going to grow, that's fine, but he is going to have to grow before he plays men's football. He is not a viable option for a backup left-back beyond, you know, the odd 10 minutes here or there in a cup game. So we definitely need a backup left-back. And again, it's absolutely wild to me. We did it last season. We only had Magoma for the first half of the season until Rommins came in. And we've done it again. You know, it's absolutely insane, the risk we're taking with that. Because as you say, genuinely, if Rommins gets injured, who plays there? Sterling, maybe? He's played left-back before. Is that really an option? You know, it's mental that we're actually sitting here wanting to contemplate that.
And then similarly at centre-back, I mean, right now, for me, Fernandez shouldn't be anywhere near the first team, but what alternatives have we got? I mean, that's just poor. That's poor for it. That's poor. You'd be saying that's poor for St. Mirren. You'd be saying that's poor for any team trying to compete in a league, let alone a side like us that are supposed to be competing in Europe and the league and trying to win competitions. It's amateur looking, to be frank.
Yeah, and that's again what really surprises me. This is a Derek McInnes team to put up with that at that sort of porous centre halves. I just think it's one of these things he just wouldn't tolerate. I will say, Fernandez probably put out the best pass today when he chipped a ball over the top for Raskin to run through for a decent chance. But he's so lackadaisical. He's just one of those players. I'm just not sure he's going to be able to play his way out of that. Completely understand why he's highly rated. You know, these days it's all about stats, yeah? So what's Fernandez? 6'4", 6'5", wins all his aerial duels. He's actually quite good in the one-on-one duels on the ground. You know, he's good at bringing the ball out and things like that. So you can see why in the stats scouting, he marks really highly. That's why Dortmund have been to watch him and all that, because of those marks. But when you actually watch him, he can't defend. You know, he doesn't know where to be. He doesn't know where to position himself. He doesn't track his men. And he's got no urgency in his game whatsoever. We all remember or you might not, I think you are old enough to be honest, when Charlie Miller broke into the Rangers team, Real Madrid came to scout him. Now, Real Madrid came to scout him because they have 300 scouts and he came to watch everybody, you know, and that's just the way it goes. And that's similar to now, these big teams, everyone that's scoring on these stats, they go and watch them and they scout them. But for me, Fernandez is a long, long way from having the ability to play at a much higher level. And he wasn't particularly good today. And he's been downright bad the first couple of games. So, yeah, squad building, having to rely on a centre-back that's suffering at the moment and is off form, it's a major concern.
Just to touch upon his partner there, who actually did do enough to encourage me today. Again, a player I've never heard of before we were interested. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But I thought he looked solid when he came in today. He looked like, yes, he's raw, and I think he will improve. But I have seen enough to be encouraged. And what I'd like to see now is, you know, he's not on loan, so let's back him and let's give him a regular run in the team. I mean, we don't have very much alternatives, don't get me wrong. But even if we did at this point, I think we need to start building up a player, building up confidence in there. And hopefully, if we bring in someone else, at this minute in time, it would be Fernandez who's sitting on the bench and Matanya playing if he ever comes in.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I thought Matanya was fine today. It's like a solid debut, 6 out of 10. Don't think he was spectacular, but he certainly didn't do much wrong. But he looks quick across the ground, looks quite comfortable on the ball. But there was a worry when he came in that he was quite similar to Fernandez, you know, based on some of the scouting reports that he kind of likes to carry the ball, but if he loses it, you're in trouble, all this kind of stuff. It just screams, we are screaming out for that David Weir signing at the back, just to be the calm head and the experienced voice, just to guide these guys through it. We desperately, desperately need that. Again, I don't know who that could be in 2026, but if you handed me £5 million and said, who do you want to buy? I would say, let's go and buy a centre-half. You know, an experienced centre-half, 28 years plus, someone that we can just calm the defence down, because that defence is an absolute riot.
It is, it absolutely is. It needs somebody to come in and grab a bit of scruff of the neck, and right now they don't exist.
No.
So it's a big, big concern, and hopefully something that we're going to address, although there's been plenty of areas that need addressed and just have been neglected. So hopefully this isn't going to be another one of them. But as we move on there towards the sort of start of the second half of the game, I mean, we're 1-0 down at halftime. For me, I've seen a lot of people saying we're terrible. I don't actually think we were terrible today. I think we did control the game to a point. But you control the game without looking like you're ever going to put the ball in the net, and whilst also looking like every time that they break on you, they're going to put the ball in the net. It's only going to end up one way. And that's what I feel. I think we do have the ball and we have control, but we don't look like we're ever going to really do much with it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the strong caveat with that control, quote unquote, that we had is Hibs are 1-0 up away at Ibrox. So naturally they're going to sit back and let us have the ball. You know, so of course we'll get more possession stats because that's the way the game's developing tactically. That's the way the game that they want to play. And you're right, it's just that there wasn't, certainly up until sort of laterally, there wasn't much for the Hibs keeper to do. Not huge amounts, you know. There was the ball cleared off the line in the first half, which was okay. It was a bit unlucky. Really nice wing play from Yokota. So, you know, there was just the wee spark here and there. But again, it's all based on individual moments. There's no patterns. You know, it's not like we play with attacking fullbacks, you know, getting crosses in. It's not like we play with narrow tens or making deep runs or, you know, something that one of our rivals do, you know, hit the byline and cut it back. They've been doing that for 5 years. You know, we don't have any of those patterns of play. I honestly don't know what our attacking strategy is, other than just, you know, put it up and somebody do something. And Shankland is playing this role. I'm not saying he's not working hard at it, but it's just not effective. It's just not working. And I think if you asked him, you sit him down tomorrow and say, where do you want to play this kind of withdrawn 10, you know, picking up the ball with your back to goal off the centre halves, or do you want to just be between the posts trying to gobble up chances? I think we know what his answer would be.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think the one thing that may change this role potentially is Tremidi and his injury. The one positive that I did actually think in that first half was, at times I thought the link-up play between Shankland and Tremidi, it was good. And particularly in the sort of 15 minutes. I was actually optimistic for about 15 minutes, even though we were 1-0 down. And then, you know, crash into the advertising board. And Dramedy looks like, we obviously don't know the ins and outs of it, but it looked like potentially a bad one. Do you feel, A, will that change, will that force us to have to play Shankland as a nine if Dramedy is out? And also, do you think it will change what we have to do in the market? I mean, we've touched upon, we need a centre-half. For me, we definitely need a right-back, we need a left-back, we need wingers. But we also are potentially now going to need a centre-forward.
Yeah, well, the problem is, Shankland can't play up front on his own. And he's never really done that. So if Tremiti's out for any longer than a few weeks, okay, play Shankland as the nine. I think that's what suits him best. But you also need somebody to get close to him. Now, who could that be in the current squad? We bizarrely tried it with Chukwuanyi on Thursday night, which was just weird. I just don't know what McInnes was thinking. People are going to say Asgard, but for me, I'm not seeing any difference from this season's Asgard from last season, if I'm honest. He came back from the World Cup, you know, his chest puffed up, you know, cut short his holiday, fair play, came back, but I'm just not seeing much of improvement from him, if I'm honest. I know it's only 3 games in, but he's 50 games into his Rangers career. Yeah. So we can make an assessment of him now. So the problem with that is, if Tremiti's out, who plays behind Shankland? Or if you're not going to play Shankland as the nine, you then need to go out and buy somebody that can replace what Tremiti gives you, which isn't a huge amount of goals, but is it at least somebody that's got a bit of talent on the ball and can do the unexpected? And those players cost money. So, you know, I mean, if we didn't have bad luck, we'd have no luck. You know, what's the saying? If you fall into a barrel of tits and you come up sucking your thumb, that's Rangers at the moment, you know?
It is. It absolutely is. I'd be interested in knowing your thoughts on the Deary. You know, that's you know, the equivalent of, he was on for over an hour today. That's the equivalent of basically a start and then being subbed off. He was very poor at Dundee United. Obviously scored a hat-trick behind the closed doors during the week. Have you seen any shoots of encouragement there? Again, for me, it depends what you're looking for, because if that is to be somebody that's going to consistently put the ball in the net, I'm seeing none of that. But I'm seeing that he can play, he can link up a little bit, but that's not really what we need when I look at what we already kind of have at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not sure where he fits in, if I'm honest, because he's not a nine, he's not a leading man, he's not going to get you 25 goals a season.
No.
He's a worker and he's a harrier, but I also don't think he's brilliant with his back to goal. And what you'll get in SPFL domestic games is, you know, a packed box, defenders right up your backside, holding on your shirt, you know, and hassling you. And I'm just not sure that's his game either. I think last season he was most effective when he kind of dropped deeper into midfield, but which is fine. But if you're going to do that, you need people running beyond him. And we don't do that, or we don't function that well. We've got problems out wide. So again, I just wonder what his role is in this team moving forward. And I think the ultimate acid test is, what do we pay for him? About 4 million.
Okay.
See if a German team came in and offered us our money back, I would probably accept it. You know, just based on what I've seen. And it sounds harsh because he's only been here 6 months, but, you know, tough decisions might just have to be made.
Yeah, and talking about harsh, I don't think Majovski is by any stretch the answer and should be the guaranteed starting player. But I tell you what, in a game like that today, I would have liked to have him on the bench. You know, especially when you've had to use your one striker change after, what, 30-odd minutes. You know, it's an awful long time if it's not working for your other strikers to not have a player. Say what you want about Majovski, and actually, the way he has his faults, and he did have his faults last season, but his actual goals for minutes on the pitch for Rangers last season was decent enough.
Yeah, I mean, again, in the right system, Majovski will get you goals. I just worry if that's the system Rangers are ever going to play domestically, because of the sorts of teams we come up against. But you're right, you know, if you get 10 minutes to go, you need a goal. I would have Majovski in the pitch because he can sniff one out. But we actually look, you know, I don't think he was even on the bench today, was he?
No, he was sitting in the stand.
Yeah, and, you know, Cameron was missing and Barron's missing and Suter's missing. You know, we've got all these players that were paying that just have just completely vanished. It's so weird, the approach to squad management. You know, Suter wasn't even taken on the pre-season trip. Everyone's like, oh, he's about to move. You know, and that was a month ago. He's still here. You know, it just baffles me what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, Cameron and stuff like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Lyle Cameron is going to be a difference maker. But see, at domestic level, he's probably can offer you something to some extent, if nothing, if not work rate, you know. But he's just completely bombed out. So I just, I'm just a bit bewildered as to what direction this team's supposed to be heading in at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other obvious standout positive for me would have been Yokota. You know, I don't think he was 10 out of 10, but I could see him grow in confidence, come out of his shell a wee bit and want to be a bit more involved in the game and sort of trying to make things happen. I think he clearly showed that he can put a decent ball in. And he actually, we've been crying out, a lot of the fans have been wanting Czerny to come back. I'm on the fence, which obviously wouldn't say no to him, but I wouldn't be desperately going to chase him to spend the money. But I sort of I saw Czerny vibes from Yokota in the way that he played and the way that he sort of low centre gravity changed in direction and cutting in there. I mean, I don't know if that's just because he's, you know, an inverted winger, but I've seen enough in the, particularly today, less so on Thursday, I would say, to think that he certainly will be able to contribute, but more wingers are needed on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, there was some really nice skill from him today, and he some good battling qualities. And then when he gets the ball, crucially, he lifts his head. You know, a couple of kind of nice sort of switchy style passes to the opposite wing today. You know, he's always looking to go forward, and it's such a basic thing. But over the years, we've had so many Rangers players that when pick up the ball, the first instinct, right, look, roll it back, calm it down, roll it back, and let's build something here. Whereas he's just saying, let's get it forward. So yeah, he's definitely got a part to play. I like having a player that opposition are worried about him getting one-on-one. You know, we've not had that so much since maybe Kent, you know, where everyone opposition would double up on him because you can't leave him one-on-one. And I thought Yokota had some wee signs today where he got one-on-one and got by. And that's a good sign because we desperately need that. But I mean, you know, if we're being honest, we need a left winger and a right winger here. I mean, we just do. You know, obviously we want Curtis to get game time this season. Didn't think he was fantastic today. Didn't think he was terrible. Did better on Thursday, but I thought he did better on Thursday because he came in and did the basics well. You know, I didn't do anything spectacular. He just did running in behind, you know, carrying the ball, putting crosses in, you know, running inside, attacking the back post. That's just kind of basic stuff. But he did it well, and I still think he can do that. But again, is he going to play 50-odd games a season for Rangers? Probably not. So we desperately need reinforcements in the wide areas because we just have not had reliable wingers since Czerny, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So we sort of, I think we were better in the second half. We sort of huffed and puffed and eventually we got back into the game. But what do you feel sort of contributes to us looking like a bit more of a threat? I still don't think enough, but a bit more of a threat in the second half and get essentially getting ourselves back into the game. What do you think the factors were there?
I mean, I think we just played with a bit more impetus, trying to get the ball forward. I thought Dio did okay when he came on.
He did.
You know, he's using the ball. He's one of the midfielders whose best quality is use of the ball. So he did make a difference. You know, Shankland had a really good header. Again, actually giving him chances in the box, he will create opportunities. He was unlucky with the one that hit the bar. Okay, that's just how it goes. And the OG was decent from Kasama. But again, it's not rocket science. Getting the head down, driving at pace into the box, and it ends up in an OG. You know, football's a simple game. You know, the difficulties when we get that and take a touch and turn and roll it back and then touch, roll it back, you know, and keep rolling it out of the box. But I just thought we had a bit more oomph to an attacking play. But, you know, as always, and we saw it at Tannadice, because let's be honest, Dundee United should have scored to make it 2-1 at Tannadice when the guy tried that ridiculous chip. And it's exactly what happened today. We're chasing the game, lose the ball, one pass, and it's 3-on-3. And okay, they get really lucky with the deflection. It takes it away from the keeper. But look, when your luck's out, your luck's out. But it's this, when you look at the second goal we lost on Thursday night, we leave ourselves so open on the counter attack. It's incredible. If we lose the ball, you're basically an on goal, and that is mental. Better teams will absolutely destroy us if we play that open in the future.
Yes, if we manage to qualify for the Europa League, for example, some of the teams you're up against, you know, I'm thinking of good Lyon team we played a few years ago, things like that. I mean, they will they will come.
Yeah. Chris, to be honest, you're thinking loftier than me. I'm thinking if we have to play, you know, Bran again or Sturm Graz, they'll rip us apart again. You know, and it's really, really depressing that's how far we've fallen. But this is a Rangers team that just is not doing the basics. In fact, they're not doing the basics full stop, never mind doing the basics well. Do you know what I mean? And that's something that either needs to get solved really quickly or the wheels are going to come off in Russell Martin-esque fashion.
I mean, one of the things we have addressed this summer has been solidifying the core of the group, I suppose, getting experienced key players. And I think that's what kind of, we do lack the quality, and we've touched upon that, and we'll look at the transfer window a wee bit after. But I think what's bothered me about, you know, losing the game late on, you can lose any game when you're going forward, you're trying to push, but we've brought in these experienced players. This is supposed to be game. We're supposed to be a better mentality. We're supposed to be able to manage a game. And the one thing you do, you've trailed most of that game home to Hibs. You should never be losing at home to Hibs. You've got yourself back in later on. The one thing you do not do is give up a stupid goal at the very, very end. You know that. Okay, if you end up 1-1, we're still going to be pissed off. But to go out and lose that game, it shows that okay, we've brought in leadership and stuff, but. But what's changed? That's what worries me.
And I think that's the real key point, because I've said it on this podcast before, I don't think it makes one jot of difference who wears the armband. Right? I really don't. It's not Football Manager where you change the captain and it gives a wee lift to everybody under the bonnet. It doesn't work like that. You know, if you're a leader, you're an organiser, you don't need an armband to organise the team. So we do lack those organisers and those leaders, but on paper, we've suddenly got them. You know, and it's not made one blind bit of difference. Not one blind bit of difference. The player, the team with the best footballers generally wins. And you can have a team rammed full of Andy Haldies that were born on Copeland Road. It's still not going to be good enough to win a league. No matter how much they want it or know what it means or all that kind of stuff, all these intangibles, it doesn't make a big difference. The team with the best players will win. And that's where Rangers really, really lack at the moment. I always remember, I'll completely contradict myself and say, do you remember the Leipzig game? In the tunnel, Connor Goldson was heard saying to his team about Leipzig, I don't care what their names are, I don't care how much they're worth, they don't have a team like ours. You know, they had that belief and the team was greater than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. So if you're up against a team that have better footballers than you, that's how you compete, you know, to be a better unit, better organised and greater than the sum of your parts. We are supposed to have better footballers than Hibs. But they did that to us today. They were a more solid unit. They worked better together and they beat us because of that. So it can work both ways. And right now, Rangers, I don't think any part of this Rangers team is functioning at all. And already we're one home game into the season and the atmosphere is pretty toxic at the end, as far as I understand from the pictures and the messages I got from pals over there. So, yeah, it's absolutely grim. It's absolutely grim. And Sunday nights are dull enough with having to go to work, you know, the next morning. Rangers just seems to make it worse these days.
Yeah, it certainly does. So as we sort of look to move on from this terrible start of the season, it's obvious that we need signings. Now, if we were to make signings here, I think, I don't like to always look at the opposite side of the city, but you look, they spent 11 million on a striker and look what he's done today. I know he didn't have the greatest first game, but you get what you pay for. So I'd be interested to know, we've obviously touched upon, we need fullbacks, we need a centre-back, we need wingers, and we need some creativity at the potentially striker, depending on committee. But would you rather see us sign, say, 5-6 more players, 5 players, say, or would you rather see us sign 3 players, but real game-changers, real difference-makers? What's more important at the minute?
I think we need 3 game-changers. And difference makers, I've got to be honest. You know, the funny thing about the guy that they signed, they're all the rage on Twitter these days, these kind of radar maps, you know, for players. They say they give you a radar map and if you spike out that way, you're really good. You know, there's certain accounts that every player Rangers have signed over the past years, you know, from Antman and Rothwell, they've shown his radar map, oh, this guy's going to be quality. When they signed that guy from Bodo Glimt, his radar was terrible, apparently, and everyone's, oh, look, this is going to be a flop, this will be a major flop, look at his radar. They are complete rubbish. Those things, you know, the eye test exists. You can spot a player, And we just need to move away from these stats type signings. You know, you look at somebody instantly, often you can tell how good they're going to be and if they're going to be able to make a difference. And we need players of that caliber. I always remember coming in, you've seen someone like Van Bronckhorst when he came in. He just looked at, I mean, none of us really seen him play. I remember when he signed, he was in the Dutch 98 World Cup squad, but didn't play. He was just young. But when you saw him, you just thought, this guy's silky. You can just spot it. And we need players at that level. We need players that come in and just instantly lift the team and can just immediately show their quality. We do not have time to have more than a few players who are development projects, trying to bring them on and sell them and all that kind of stuff. Them. Yeah, exactly. We just need those guaranteed quality players, like the guy Druech, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from PSV. I mean, a few years ago, he was actually really, really shit hot. Like, he was considered, he'd be considered way out of Rangers' reach. Now, yeah, it is a bit of a concern that he's fallen away a bit and he's not in the PSV team, but we might just have to take a risk on him. But those are the kind of levels that I think we need right now. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, Ben, where we were looking at Dessers, Cherny and Igaman as a front three and thinking they're not good enough. We would kill for those three. Yeah. Absolutely kill for them. And then you go further back to the Seville team. The Seville team would wipe the floor with this current Rangers side. Absolutely bend them over. And what was the Seville team built for? 10, 12 million or something like that. And most of that was Kent. Do you know what I mean? It's about getting the calibre of player coming in. And you know, in certain aspects, you need to be able to dominate games and show your quality. In others, in Europe, you need to be greater than the sum of your parts to compete. And right now, this Rangers team is capable of neither of those things. So if we can get a quality centre-half, a quality wide man, and maybe even if Chumiti's not in, a quality striker as well, these guys that can be difference makers, I think it would help us a lot. But what we've got, 5 weeks in the window left? I've got to say, I do actually think we will spend. I'm pretty confident we are going to spend, but given the situation we find ourselves in, are we going to spend haphazardly in panic mode? Do you know what I mean? Or are these people that we've actually had in mind? I can see in the chat, Dio's been linked to a move away. Someone told me earlier on that that's genuine and will happen, and he is going to Turkey. So again, I mean, he's played a lot in these three games, so it seems a bit weird. But nevertheless, if we sell him on, we're going to need another centre mid as well. Because Dio goes and Raskin goes as expected. I mean, what's your first choice three there? Wow. You know, it makes for grim reading.
Yeah, I think what you just said there is interesting. I would agree. I think having those three players that are really going to make an actual difference is worth more than just five squad players, because I think if we've brought in McCrory's, which for me is a squad player at this moment in time, until he proves otherwise. So I think what we could also do is we could bring in those three quality players, and then we haven't really utilised the loan market this year. So bring in a couple of loans, then bring in, as you say, I think a centre half is key. A winger is definitely key. I wouldn't be against bringing in a decent right back on loan, potentially a left back on loan, to be able to spend the money elsewhere. But yes, it's interesting you touch upon Dio there. Look, I think this summer is the time, and I didn't expect Dio to have featured as he has done. It's interesting because actually I thought he had a decent game when he came on the day. But Dio can do that. He can have good games, but he'll have that good game a day, and then the next six will be distinctly average. So he's just not the answer for Rangers. I think if we are able, I think we paid six maybe 2 years ago for him. So if we're able to get four at this stage, I'd be happy enough. It's another one off the wage bill. Is there anyone else that you'd like to see leaving the club? Obviously, you touched upon Raskin. It's not that I'd like to see Raskin. I think he needs to now move on for his sake and for the club's sake. But is there anyone else that you'd like to see moving on?
Yeah, I agree. Raskin needs to go at this moment in time, just to maximise his value, and we can reinvest. Again, Dio is probably the right time for Dio to go. I would move on Asgard as well, if I'm honest. I think his stock will be relatively high after the World Cup. He's still a young player and he can get better, but sometimes I just think players just don't have the minerals to be at Rangers, and he just strikes me as one of those players, if I'm honest. I'd probably move him on as well. I think we'd be able to get a decent profit on him. And the rest, again, Fernandez, if there was genuine interest in Fernandez, I'd be really tempted to take it. But that would leave us really, really short at the back.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing needing done. Because ultimately, you know, if we get through on Thursday, and, you know, I was watching was it Four Lads or Rangers Review? And everybody was sort of saying, yeah, I saw enough on Thursday. I think we'll beat the Polish guys at Omi. I've seen enough. I was thinking, I must be watching a different game. I didn't see anything on Thursday night that gives me confidence for the second leg, if I'm honest. So, you know, if we somehow get through against the Poles on Thursday, we're still going to have another tricky away tie. We're on a worst ever, I think, run of losing European away games. So we've got no right to suggest we're going to go to Georgia or even to Northern Ireland and win that game. You know, so it's if you start wheeling and dealing and selling players that have been playing, like Dio and Fernandez and Asgard, if you do sell them all, you're going to have to get replacements in instantly. Otherwise, the teams will be even shoddier that we've been seeing. So it's just really, really disappointing. I know it's the World Cup and I know the window's still open and all the rest of it, but the SPFL starts early in comparison to other leagues, and it's really, really disheartening that we're in this three games into the season and we're still having to discuss this massive turnover of players because the squad looks absolutely nowhere near ready, absolutely nowhere near it. And if we're lucky enough to get into Europa groups, great. But with this current squad, that's going to be a really difficult experience. And we've got Pittodrie coming up. We've got Parkhead coming up. You know, it's, it's push the panic button time for me. I hate saying it three games in. I'm not saying anyone needs sacked or anything like that. I'm really not. But this is a story that we've seen all too often. And if it continues on this trajectory, it only ends one way.
Yeah, I mean, panic button in terms of for this season, I agree. In terms of for the manager, I'm sort of backing him now and want to see him. Well, we all do, but I want to see him give him a couple of years, really. I mean, obviously, if things get terrible and continue the way they are, you know, it's a different conversation. But I think for this season, you know, the only reason we got back into last season was a freak, was the fact that they fell off a cliff for a while and Hearts also did the same. You know, we don't want to be in that position. That's not going to happen again. You can't expect that to happen, you know. So we need to now be taking steps forward. I did see that as well, where a lot of people were saying, you know, the feel that we've seen enough and we'll be able to beat the Polish team. And I think we'll be able to beat the Polish team, but I think that's because we have better players. But then we have better players in Hibs, as you talked about there. I don't think I've seen enough to say that we'll beat the Polish team, because I've seen nothing. I didn't see anything in Poland the other night. I do think we'll be able to get over the line, and I think we'll make the group stages. I think if this squad at this minute in time is not Europa League group stage quality, I have to be honest, for the most part. But I think we'll make it only because of a pretty favourable draw. So if you were looking towards the game on Thursday night, you know, it's quite clear now that Derek McInnes does not know his best 11. What is our best 11 that we have at the minute? What do you think it is? Let's include Tremetti. We don't know what the injury is. So.
Yeah. Well, I think we can presume he's out, no matter how severe his injury is. Presume he's out for a Thursday. But obviously the keeper picks himself. I'd go with, Sterling, Bacanya, Fernandez, Romans. I think, again, I wouldn't play Fernandez if we could help it, but I don't think we've really got a choice, do we?
No.
And then a midfield three. I think you need to go three in Europe. I'd probably just put Raskin, Dragojevic, and Dio, if he's still here, just for a bit of balance. On the left-hand side, I'd probably play that three. I'd play Jokita, and I'd play Curtis, and I'd play Shankland. And again, Shankland can't really play up front on his own, but we don't have any choice.
Yeah.
And we've left ourselves with a dearth of options. So that's how I'd go with it, because we need a goal. You know, there's no point going out on Thursday keeping it tight and things like that, because we need to score. As it stands, we're out. So we may as well go 4-3-3 and try and go for it. But ultimately, again, I'm working up here all week, so I won't make the game on Thursday. The mate's taking my ticket. But again, if the Poles go one up, I just don't see us coming back.
No.
I just don't think we've got it in us to claw that back. And it's such a hard fall off from where we were. Even this time last year under Russell Martin, you know, we put out Panathinaikos, we put out Pilsen and things like that. Okay, the wheels came off against Bruges, you know, step up in quality, but, you know, it wasn't this bad this time last year. I mean, you think of the money we've spent since qualifying for the Champions League, say, 60 million? You know, easily. and look at the team we've got. It's mind-numbing how bad it's been.
That's negligent, to be honest with you. You know, some of the dealings that we've done, you know, it's been absolutely nothing short of terrible. The only place that I differ in your team there is I would actually play, I don't know, I'm sort of contradicting myself, but I would play Devlin in there instead of Dio, because I think it works in a three, because I think you can let Devlin do what Devlin does, and that possibly frees up Raskin that little bit more. So that's the only thing. And then also, by all accounts, I don't expect Dio to still be there. But if he is, I wouldn't be heartbroken by that, because I don't think he's the answer, and I don't think he's been wonderful. But I still think he's got enough to get you pass marks against that particular team, whose name I have avoided trying to pronounce all evening. So, yeah. As we sort of just look ahead to that game, what is your prediction? Will we make it through? And will we make it through in 90, or will we need extra time?
Oh, yeah. Let's try and end on a somewhat positive note. I think we'll squeak through in extra time. Let's say that. Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. And you know, Jagiellonia, I'll say it. I think that's correct.
No.
they will fancy it. You know, they will fancy taking a scalp, because you know, again, I see a lot of kind of fan media and podders. Oh, you know, they're average, this Polish mob. They're average. I wasn't impressed by them. But you know, exactly. What are they thinking about us? Do you know what I mean? It's grim to think where how far our stock's fallen in Europe. But they will come to Ibrox with absolutely no fear whatsoever.
So as you say, you know, they'll have looked at us. If I was sitting there as an opposition manager or a coach or whatever, having analysed the three competitive games and indeed the friendlies, I would be fearing nothing. You know, not be fearing this Rangers team at all.
All you need to do is win the ball off us.
Yeah.
Towards the halfway line, and you're pretty much in on goal. You know, one good pass is all it takes. Structurally, off the ball, we are an absolute disaster. And it's wild that McInnes can't see that or sort it, you know? And they'll fancy it. They'll come in. They will sit in. Again, they're winning the tie, so they don't need to step out. They will sit in and try and hit on the break. And to be honest, that is exactly how you should play against this Rangers team, because we will give up lots and lots of chances to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And for what it's worth, I do think we will have enough to get over the line. I think we will win. I think we'll win 2-1, and then we'll win it an extra time. At this minute in time, that's about as optimistic as I can manage. Last question before we finish off. Do you think we will? We've heard this whole leading up to Dundee United. We heard, we'll hopefully have two in before Dundee United. Do you anticipate us having anyone new in before Thursday?
Probably not before Thursday. But I've got, I think the Samirin Cup game is the next game, is it?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
2 weeks today. I expect we'll have a good few in before then. I think we will splurge a wee bit now. Now, whether that's wise or not, I don't know. But look, as it stands at the moment, this season's going to be a disaster unless something miraculous happens. So I think we just need to take the risk and try and spend. Remember, we've got a shareholders meeting tomorrow morning. You know, I saw Marate and Kavanagh were at the game today. They're going to catch some heat tomorrow morning. They definitely are. And I think that's fair at this stage because of the money that's been spent and the way the team is. Now, on the flip side, you have to say, well, look, they're investing. It's their money. You know, they have forked out. You know, they are trying to do the right thing. But strategically, it's just been all over the place. Everybody knew Russell Martin's a disastrous appointment. Lots of people had real trepidation about Danny Rule. A lot of people were behind the McInnes appointment, but then the recruitment strategy has just been completely bizarre. So we just can't seem to do anything right at the moment. And, you know, to be, 5 points behind already after two domestic games, that's just never going to be a comfortable position for a Rangers hierarchy to sit and face the shareholders. So I'll be interested to see what comes from that meeting. I do expect we'll spend a bit of cash before the next league game just to try and placate the masses a wee bit. But it's absolutely imperative that cash is spent on the right people and in the right positions. Because as we discussed earlier on, we need ready-made guys to go on that pitch and make the difference immediately. No projects, no EFL freebies. nothing like that. Again, Dan Neil didn't get off the bench today. You know, that was a big, like, Rangers internally felt that was a real coup to get him. And then you look at it and you think, hey, when he was on loan at Ipswich, he was released by Sunderland. Do you know what I mean? Is this a coup? You know, it's we just need to reframe exactly what it is we look for and what we think is going to succeed here, because we need a hell of a lot more, you know, Van Bronckhorsts and fewer Joe Rothwells, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's a good place to sort of end it tonight, on the prospect of spending, 50, 60 million, quoting Alan Rogers there. So, Alan, thank you for joining me tonight for this cheery and uplifting discussion.
Yeah, it's good to be back, I think. Is it? I don't know. Look, it's never easy, but we're in it for the long haul. So let's see how the season pans out. Fingers crossed for Thursday. Thanks again, mate.
Cheers. And thank you to everybody for watching the podcast live tonight. We've been live on YouTube, as you know. And if you've missed it, you can obviously watch it back on YouTube or get it tomorrow where you get any of your podcasts on your Apple Podcasts, your Spotify, and any of those similar platforms. And again, we thank Forest Precision Engineering for backing our podcast. We will be back on Friday. I'm not actually sure who's on, but to talk about what hopefully will be our victory and safe passage into the next round of Europe. I will not be holding my breath, but cheers, everyone.